verses 1 through 9. Then Moses went up to Mount Nebo from the plains of Moab and climbed Pisgah Peak, which is across from Jericho. And the Lord showed him the whole land, from Gilead as far as Dan, all the land of Naphtali, the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah extending to the Mediterranean Sea, the Negev, the Jordan Valley with Jericho, the city of palms, as far as Zoar. Then the Lord said to Moses, "This is the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when I said, 'I will give it to your descendants.' I have now allowed you to see it with your own eyes, but you will not enter the land." So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, just as the Lord had said. The Lord buried him in a valley near Beth Peor in Moab, but to this day no one knows the exact place. Moses was 120 years old when he died, yet his eyesight was clear and he was as strong as ever. The people of Israel mourned for Moses on the plains of Moab for 30 days until the customary period of mourning was over. Now Joshua, son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the people of Israel obeyed him, doing just as the Lord had commanded Moses. This is the word of the Lord. Over 3,000 years ago, the great spiritual leader Moses was on a journey with God's people to find the promised land. After a long trek, they reached the mountains east of the Jordan River and at the north end of the Dead Sea. Moses then decided to climb to the top of Mount Nebo, also known as Pisgah Peak. The question before us is this: why did Moses climb to the top of Mount Nebo? It may not seem like it, but this is actually an important question. If we are able to successfully answer this question, then such an answer may dramatically transform the life of this congregation and the lives of everyone in this room. Meanwhile, hold that question in your mind, as we'll get back to it shortly. Mount Everest is the highest mountain on Earth above sea level. Nepalese mountaineer Tenzing Norgay and New Zealander mountaineer Edmund Hillary were the first climbers confirmed to have reached the summit. After the experience, Hillary was quoted as saying, "There is something about building up a comradeship that I still believe is the greatest of all feats, and sharing in the dangers with your company of peers. It's the intense effort, the giving of everything you've got. It's really a very pleasant sensation." Modern mountain climbing is a group effort. The climbers are part of a larger team that includes sponsors, suppliers, outfitters, support staff, and so on. Most of whom do not make the actual climb, but nonetheless are essential for and benefit from a successful expedition. There's a plethora of metaphors here that can be used to describe the life, ministry, and mission of the church. You may be the spiritual equivalent of a climber, or a sponsor, or an outfitter, or support staff. But what is needed is that we work together as a team in order to have a successful expedition as the people of God. Mountain climbing is carried out in stages. The first stage is to choose a peak. Attempting to climb a mountain without actually having a mountain to climb is a ridiculous state of affairs. So how do mountaineers choose the peak they wish to climb? Famous mountaineer George Mallory was asked why he wanted to climb Mount Everest. He reportedly answered, "Because it's there." Now, on a certain level, I suppose that's a profound response. But on any level, it's not a particularly helpful one, because it's there. I imagine that most choose a peak based on a combination of personal desire to attain some sort of challenge, as well as an assessment of their own abilities. Why did Moses choose Mount Nebo? If you look at the end of verse 1 in our scripture text, it infers that Moses went up Mount Nebo because the Lord had directed him to do so. Moses was there because he wanted to do what the Lord wanted him to do. There is no higher justification in life. Whether we're talking about an individual believer or a congregation of believers, our ultimate goal is to live a life that pleases God, to be faithful to God. God is looking for faithfulness, not a selfish or materialistic gain. The story is told of Mansa Musa, the wealthy gold miner. He died and stood before St. Peter, who asked him, "By what claim do you seek to enter heaven?" Musa indignantly replied, "I'm the greatest in history. While on earth, I amassed nearly $400 billion worth of gold. What do you call that?" Peter looked at him and said, "Here, we call that pavement." What does it mean to be faithful? The Bible expresses this in so many wonderful ways. One of my favorite places is found in the book of Proverbs. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take." Proverbs 3, 5 and 6. Why did Moses climb Mount Nebo? He did so because he wanted to be faithful. But there's a lot more to it than that. Moses also wanted to know where they were going. Many years ago, My wife and I were hiking in the Uinta Mountains in Utah. We got lost. And because we were lost, we had this overwhelming urge to try to get down from the mountain as quickly as possible. But that would have been foolish. We did not know our location, and so we could easily have walked into something even more dangerous. It was counterintuitive, but instead of going down, we went up and continued going up until we reached the peak. And it was then and only then that we could see clearly where we needed to go. It seems to me that Moses was in a similar situation when he was on a journey with God's people to find the promised land. Now, to be fair, the scripture text does not say he was lost, okay? It doesn't say that. But here's the thing. If someone you know is on a journey that takes 11 days, and they're still at it after 40 years, what would you call that? 11-day trip, 40 years and counting. Okay. Well, at the very least, he must have been tired. And maybe not a little discouraged. He had been at this a long time. Now, he was also mindful that hundreds of years earlier, God had made a promise to his ancestors, Abraham and Sarah, that their descendants would become a great nation and inhabit the land of Canaan and be the means by which God would reveal a blessed salvation to all the peoples of the world. That was the promise. But Moses may have wondered, after traveling so long, if the promise was really true. But on Mount Nebo, he looked west, and God showed him the promised land. He may not have literally seen all of the promised land, but it was enough to convince him the promise was true. This was a land described elsewhere as a land flowing with milk and honey. A poetic way of describing a rich land, lush, resourceful, beautiful, a place of an abundance of enjoyment. Now, if Moses had been discouraged going up the mountain, all that was gone once he reached the summit. It's easy in life to get discouraged, even if, and sometimes especially if, we believe in God. At such times, it's important, I think, to stop and seek a higher vantage, a summit view, if you will, to look around and see what God has done and is doing in our midst, to delight in the very real promises of God, to marvel at the vastness of God's love for us. If God did not withhold even his own dear son from us, can we not trust such a God to bring us to the ultimate land of promise, far beyond a piece of real estate at the eastern end of the Mediterranean, but to a new world where God will wipe every tear from our eyes and there will be no more death or sorrow, or crying, or pain. And yes, the streets will be paved with gold. The climb to the mountaintop gave encouragement to Moses and assured him that his people had a God-promised destination. But the summit of Nebo also afforded a practical answer as to what the next step needed to be in the journey. You see, it was clear from this vantage point the best way to cross into the land of promise, the land of Canaan, which was across the Jordan near Jericho. And we know from history that that's what they did. A major reason for this Vision Summit series is to facilitate a climb, if you will, a metaphorical climb to the summit for renewed hope in our journey of faith, a clear vision of God's preferred future for our fellowship. You see, the congregation of First Presbyterian Church is just one small part of a vast body of God's people who share a common and unshakable hope in the promises of God as revealed and vindicated in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. But, like Moses, we also want to gain a practical answer to the question, where are we going? Specifically, what steps is God leading us to take as we engage in ministry in the days and years ahead? Moses never reached the promised land, at least not the specific parcel of land called by that name west of the Jordan River. He died east of the river and was buried in an unknown location. By the way, this phrase, his eyesight was clear and he was as strong as ever, was a figure of speech usually addressed to those of advanced age. Today we would say something like, you know, he was in pretty good shape for the shape he was in. Without fanfare and with dignified simplicity, the author describes the passing of Moses, the servant of the Lord, and one of the greatest figures in human history. He led the people of God right up to the promised land. Which begs the question, who's going to lead him now? Moses anticipated that question. He passed the torch to Joshua and the next generation. Joshua would continue the journey of faith. I don't know if you figured this out yet or not. What I'm suggesting is that most of us in this room are Moses. We've been laboring at this thing called church for a long time. Maybe we're tired. Maybe we're frustrated. Maybe we're struggling with doubts. What we need is to renew our hope in God. We need to discern where we're going, where God is leading us. And we need to learn how to pass the torch on to the next generation. Or as one of our church elders puts it, Generation J. Generation J. I'll give you a couple seconds to figure that out. J stands for Joshua. How do we do that? How do we pass the torch? I must confess to you, I am struggling to find the answer. But I do know two ways that won't work. First of all, it will not work if we just whine about it. Complaining about the younger generation is not going to cause a stampede of millennials into these pews. The second thing that will not work is to expect the next generation to be exactly like us, to do the things the way we did them, to adore the things we adored, to follow the same ineffective strategies we did. Fifteen years ago, I told you that if you ask any church member the question, how many Presbyterians does it take to change a light bulb, that the most likely answer you'd receive is, change? Presbyterian Christians are afraid of change. And for that matter, a great many other Christians also are afraid of change. Among other things, we fear the loss of tradition. But there's a huge difference between tradition and traditionalism. A Christian tradition is valuable because it reflects the truth and beauty of God. Traditionalism means we do things because, well, that's the way we've always done it. Which reminds me of one of my favorite stories about cooking ham for Easter. It was Easter, and four generations had gathered for a family dinner. The youngest girl noticed her mother slice off the end of the ham and place it in the oven, sliced off 2 inches, and put the rest in to be baked. She wondered about this and asked, Mom, why did you slice off the end of the ham before you put the rest of it in the oven? And her mother said, well, I guess I never thought about it before, but my mother always did that way. So the little girl went to see her grandmother. Grandmother, how come you always cut off the end of the ham at Easter? And the grandmother said, that's the way my mother always did it. And finally, the little girl went to her great-grandmother and asked, Great-grandma, how come you always used to slice off the end of the ham for Easter dinner? Oh, dear, replied great-grandmother. That's because my pan was too small. Do you understand Joshua was not Moses? Different people. His style, approach, thinking, and mannerisms were all different. But he was committed to the same God. What's more, Moses was willing to pass the torch to him because he trusted him. Are we willing to do the same? Why did Moses climb to the top of Mount Nebo? Do we have the answer? Well, Not a complete answer. Not yet. So we need to work together to find the answer. And this series is a starting point. Meanwhile, we do want to recognize that God is already at work in our midst. We want to try to discern what our next steps in our ministry here in Battle Creek will be. We want to try to learn how to pass the torch to the next generation. And above all, we want to declare with the conviction of the saints of old, God is not done with us yet.